We are holding on Kufnun Gimel Amud Bey's fifth line of the wide lines on the Gins Kilacher. Okay, so we learned in the Mishnah about the case where a person is coming home from a trip. He has packages with him, he has his wallet with him, whatever. It's Shabbos is starting. What does he do? So we said, ideally, what he does is he gives his wallet to the proper way is he gives his wallet to a goy to carry home for him. If there's no goy, we said he puts it on the donkey that he has with him. And we said in the Gemara, we discussed in the Gemara also the possibilities. What if he has a cheresh or shoiter or cotton with him? What if he doesn't have any of the above with him, about carrying it less than 4 amos at a time? So now talking further about this matter of having an animal do malacha for you on Shabbos. So we talked yesterday that this kind of thing where you're going to be causing an animal to walk on Shabbos doing some kind of malacha is something called mechamer. Mechamer means melashon chamer, a donkey. So it means making the donkey or any other kind of animal do a malacha for you. You're leading, Rashi describes it, manig chamer to'una. You're leading a donkey that's laden with packages or whatever. So that kind of thing is called mechamer. And so now we're going to deal with exactly what is the level of chiyuv of that on Shabbos. So Omer Rami Bachama, Hamachamer Ach Behemte B'Shabbos B'Shogig Chayv Chatas B'Mezir Chayv Skila. So Rami Bachama says it's a full fledged malacha. Person does it B'Shogig on Shabbos, he's going to be Chayv Chatas like any of the 39 malachas. Person does it B'Mezir, he's going to be Chayv Skila again like any of the 39 malachas. Now according to Rami Bachama, why is it not listed as one of the 39 malachas? Because the fact is he himself is not doing the malacha. The animal is doing the malacha, but it's doing it at his command. He's telling the animal to go, and it goes, and therefore Rami Bachama says that's enough to make him chayv chatos or skila. My timer, now why is that? Why, after all, if he's not doing the malacha, why should he be chayv chatos or skila? Omar Rava, or Rabba, it says on the side, do omakra loy sasako malacha after uvehemdecha. The pasuk mentions, we say it in Shabbos morning Kiddush, you should not do malacha. You may not do malacha. You and your sons and daughters, etc., and your animals. So it mentions the animal in the same breath as you. Therefore, behemte dumi today. So we have a hekesh that your animal doing the malacha is like you doing the malacha. Mahu b'shogig chayv chatas mezid chayv skila. So if a person himself were to do the malacha, in this case carrying in Rosh Hashanah Rabin, then he'd be chayv chatas or skila af behemte nami b'shogig chayv chatas mezid chayv skila. So the same thing would be with his animal. It would also, so that would be the malacha of mechamer. Again, we talked about yesterday why the Gemara is focusing now on the Malacha of Mechamer and not on the fact that the Torah says that you and your animal should rest on Shabbos. And we said there's a lot of different reasons. Among them is that's only an Esseh, and here we want to focus on the Lois Esseh, which is more severe. Shvisas Behemto, that your animal should rest on Shabbos, definitely only applies to your animal. Mechamer may or may not apply to somebody else's animal. That's Machloikas Rishonim. And you have a few other answers. One interesting one also, one answer that's given, is that maybe Shvisas Behemto, maybe women are not chayiv in it, because it's mitzvah tzeh shas mangrama. But Mechamer, being a lav, as we're saying over here, loy sasek homolocha, women are equally chayiv in lav and as men. Okay. So anyway, so that's Rami Bachama's reason. Rabba explains, is based on this hekesh between you and your animal. Omar Rabba shtei tshuvas b'davar. But Rabba says there are two problems with that explanation. Chada dichtir Torah achas yelachem lo'osa b'shgaga v'anefesh ha'shatasa b'yad Rama. Number one, we have a pasuk in Parshas Shlach that says there should be one Torah, one uniform rule for everybody who does an Aveda B'Shogig, and the next pasuk continues in somebody who acts deliberately and blasphemes Hashem by worshiping Avodah Zarah, then he gets Karis. So the fact that those two pasukim put together is also a hekish. Huk shakala Torah kulal Avodah Zarah, meaning that there's a hekish between the whole rest of the Torah and the issue of Avodah Zarah. And that's where we learn, Bechlal, which Avedas are Chayiv Chatas, is the ones that are similar to Avedas Ara, in that they're Chayiv Kares B'mezid. So, because that's what the Pasuk is saying. Anybody who does B'shogig brings a Chatas, and the next Pasuk continues, but if he acts high-handedly and deliberately then and worships Avedas Ara, then he gets Kares. So we see that there's a connection between Chatas and Kares. And no, Rava says we should also say that there's a sort of thing called ein hekesh lemechza. Once you have a hekesh between two things, that carries all the way through. So therefore, there has to be a similarity. There has to be a further similarity between avodah zarah and anything else that you're going to be chayv chatas for. Ma avodah zarah de ovid ma'ase v'gufei. So just like avodah zarah is something the person is actually doing a ma'ase with his own body, and then he's chayv chatas or skila. Just saying, I'm going to worship Avodah Zarah, for example, is not considered a Maisa. So here also it would have to be that he's doing a Maisa with his own goof, and here he's not, the animal is doing the Maisa. Now, it is true, there is a way that a person can be chayav for Avodah Zarah, the Dibur, and that is if a person verbally says about something, you are my God, Keli Ata. So then he can be chayav chatas or skila for that. However, over there, there's no further maisa than that. But that's being done by him. He's just doing the dibur. You have a few other places in the Torah we're going to discuss in the sugya over here. The question of whether dibur is like maisa. There are a few places where a person's dibur is considered like a maisa and he's punishable for it. Another example is Edim Zomim. They get misa or malchus or what have you just based on what they said. But the difference is there's just a saying. There's no maisa being done by anybody else over here. You're saying that you're telling the animal to move, but the animal itself is the one that's actually doing the melacha. So Rava is saying that's not the same as Avodah Zarah. If we have the hekesh between things that are chayav chatas and Avodah Zarah, then that hekesh has to carry all the way through. And that would mean that there's no, that would mean that just saying when the maisa is being done by something or someone else, as it is in this case, is not going to be chayav by Avodah Zarah, and it shouldn't be chayav over here either. So that's one problem with Rami Bahama's explanation that he should be chayv chafes or skila. But oid tnan, and also says Rava, we learn in a Mishnah hamachalal as a Shabbos the davar shachayavan ashegrase chafes valzdone skila. We learn in Masechta Sanhedrin that when it lists over there the various things that are chayv skila, one of them is one who's machalal Shabbos in something which is chayv chafes b'shogig or skila b'mezid. Implying the fact that the Mishnah doesn't just say I'm a Chal Losa Shabbos, it has to specify somebody who's Machal Shabbos with something that would be Chayav Chatas or Skila, That must imply there is something that could be Chil Shabbos that does not involve Chatas or Skila. Umay nihu, now on the face of it, what would that be? Lav mechamer. Wouldn't that be the lav mechamer? So Rava says, fine, I agree. The second argument of Rava is fine. I can agree there's a lav involved, but not to the extent of chatas or skila, because otherwise, then what is the Mishnah in Sanhedrin they are coming to exclude by saying, bring machal Shabbos with something that is chayav chatas or skila? So therefore, wouldn't that show that you have two different kinds of lavim of Shabbos? You have the kind which are Chayev Chatas or Skila, namely the general lav of Lois Asikom Alocha, and then you have a lav of Shabbos, which is not Chayev Chatas or Skila, and presumably that would be Mechamer. The Gemara says, no, not necessarily, at least as far as Rava's second challenge, that's not so much of a problem, because we could say that Mishnah is talking about Tchumen, Val Libedir Abakiva, Vahav Ora, Libedir Abyesi. We could say that Mishnah is not going according to everybody. The formulation of that Mishnah, I mean, the concept that a person is chayav skila for Shabbos, everybody would agree to, but the formulation of the Mishnah, that it puts it in terms of that there is some way to be mechal Shabbos, where you're over on a lav, but not chayav chatas or skila, there are two possibilities. According to Rabbi Akiva, that would be if the person is over on going outside the tchum. We've learned before that Rabbi Akiva holds that Tchumen are Daraisa. All the other Chachamim hold that Tchumen are only Drabanan, or, okay, the Rambam holds that the other Chachamim would hold that there is a Tchum of 12 mil, but, and then later on there was a Takana to reduce it to 1 mil, 2,000 Amos. But whatever, only Rabbi Akiva holds that the Tchum of 2,000 Amos is Daraisa. So according to Rabbi Akiva, you have a case. A person is over on a lav of Shabbos, al yetzi ish mimkoimoi, but he's not chayev chafes or skila for it. Or the other possibility is vav ara al libid rabbi yesi. We learned earlier in the Masechta that given that the Torah says in general loy sasakol malacha, and then the Torah tells us specifically in Parshas Vayakhel You're not allowed to kindle a fire in your houses on in any of your dwellings on Shabbos. So why does it mention that specifically? So we said two possibilities. One of them is that that teaches us, just like the Torah singles out that one and tells us a separate lav for it. So the same way each malacha is considered as if it was a separate lav, and therefore there would be a separate chatas where a person does many different malachas, as we learned back in the seventh parak about the scenario over there where a person knows that it's Shabbos, but he didn't know these things are also as malachas. But we had also Rabbi Yossi's opinion, who said Havara l'lav yotzas, that the fact that the Torah singles out Havara means that Havara is unique among all the malachas in that it's not chayav chatas or skila, only a lav. There only be malchus for that. So then, according to that, again, that Mishnah and Sanhedrin could be according to Rabbi Yossi. According to Rabbi Yossi, we would say there are two types of malachas on Shabbos. 38 out of the malachas a person is chayav chatas or skila for. The 39th, namely Havara, he's not. Okay, so then that Mishnah in Sanhedrin, where it says, where it implies that there's some kind of Chilul Shabbos that doesn't involve Kares or Skila, could be according to Rabbi Yossi, or again, it could be according to Rabbi Akiva with Tchumen. So that particular challenge of Ravas against Rami Yochamas, the Gemara is able to deflect that. But we still have the first one about there was supposed to be a Hekish with Avodah Zarah, implying that only if the person himself does the issur, not in this case where the animal did it. Okay. So this was all one version of the whole discussion. Rav Zvid Masnihoch. Rav Zvid had a different version of the discussion. It went as follows. So again, version number one that we had so far was Rami Bar Chama had said that Mechamer is really like any other malacha. A person is chayav chafas foot b'shogeg skila b'mezid. On the basis of the hekesh between you and your animal, where the Torah says loisas kamalacha ata, and then says rahemtacha, and Rava argues against it on two grounds, one of which the Gemara deflected, and the other one it didn't. Rav Zvid Masnihoch. Rav Zvid had the following version of the discussion. Amar Rami Bachama, Hamachama Acha Behemah B'Shabbos, B'Shogeg Einei Chayev Chatas B'Mezit Chayev Skila. According to Rav Zvid's version, Rami Bachama agreed that a person is not Chayev Chatas. Because fine, you have Rava's point, that in order to be Chayev Chatas, it has to be similar to Avodah Zarah, and this is not similar to Avodah Zarah, because here the animal is doing the work rather than you yourself. But Rami Bachama would still say that if a person does Machamer B'mezid, he's still going to be Chayev Skila. Masiv Rava, but Rava still asks, based on what we learned in Sanhedrin. So here the Gemara is going to bring up Bryce, actually, which expands a little bit on what we said before. It may be a Bryce, it may be a Mishnah, whatever. Hamachal is a Shabbos, but Dabash a Chayavan al Shugas a Chathas, Chayavan al Zdone Skila. A Bryce says that if a person is the Chal al Shabbos with something that if he had done it, Shogig would be Chayav Chathas, Chayavan al Zdone Skila. If he does the same thing, B'mezid, he's going to be Chayav Skila. So a little bit different than the Mishnah that we quoted before, which is that when is a person chayav skila for Shabbos, if he was over on something that is b'shogeg chatas and b'mezid skila, here this braisa spells it out a little more clearly. If it's something that you chayav chatas for b'shogeg, only then is he chayav skila for it b'mezid. Implying, says Rabba, ha'en chayavan al-shogegase chatas, en chayavan al-zone skila. Seems to imply that vice versa, if it's not something that's chayav chatas, then it's not something that's chayav skila. So then, in that case, Rava says, Rami Bachama, you agree that he's not chayav chatas in this case, for Mechamer, because of the hekesh with Avodah Zarah. So how can you say he's chayav skila? Those two things, on the basis of that brisa, it seems that those two things all go together. Whenever there's chatas, there's skila. Whenever there's no chatas, there's no skila. The answer is the Gemara says not necessarily. After all, the Braisa doesn't spell out the corollary from that, this thing that Rava is trying to infer from that. Rather, what Rava is saying is as follows. It's a given that anything for which you chayev chatas, then a person can also be chayev skila if he does it amazing. That's a given. The yesh dover she'en chayoven asher gosei chatas v'chayoven asdor neskila. But there is actually some kind of thing for which a person is not chayav chatas b'shoigig, but is chayav skila b'mezid. Namely mechamer. So actually, so you could explain the Braisa that way. The Braisa is telling us the positive side of it. Whenever there's chatas, inevitably there's skila. The Braisa is not necessarily saying the other way around. There might be actually a case, namely mechamer, where he's not chayev chatas, but is chayev skila. Okay. Next. So those are two versions of what Rami Bar Chama said and what Rava argued with him. Now continuing the discussion, the Gemara says Rava Achur de Rav Mori Bar Rochel, Rava who was not, and this isn't the regular Rava from Shas, this is a different Rava who was the brother of Rav Mori Bar Rochel. Another version is that the Rava that we're talking about, that is going to say the next thing in the Gemara, is actually the father of Rav Mori Bar Rochel. And the Gemara says, Lishna Basra. Now, the Gemara interjects. Now, by the way, it doesn't seem neither Rashi and Tosfos both explain that they don't have this, they don't accept this Girsa in the Gemara, that the Gemara is even bringing up the possibility that this Rava was the father of Rav Mori Bar Rochel. So we talked about yesterday, we mentioned yesterday about the famous Isu Giyora in Shas. We said that in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, he says that I used to think Jews are Mechal Shabbos in that they're bringing home their money bags when they come home from a trip right before Shabbos, until when he became a Yid, he understood that you have the heterim of putting it on your animal or carrying it less than 4 amos or whatever. Anyway, we talked about yesterday that this Isu Giyora had relations with one of the daughters of Shmuel named Rochel. And later on, she conceived a son. Later on, Isu himself became a ger. The son is named Rav Mori Bar Rochel, so he's named after his mother because his father was a goy at the time he was conceived, and he's not considered related to him in halacha. So Rashi points out then, we see in other Gemaras that Rav Mori Bar Rochel's father's name was Isur, not Rava. And even if, so therefore, Rashi says we can't be Gerdus this part that the Gemara is, that the Gemara is even entertaining the possibility that Rav Mori Bar Rochel's father was named Rava, because we know from elsewhere that his name was Isur, and he was a Ger. Tosfos points out, even if you're going to say, okay, maybe Isur changed his name when he became a ger, but fine. Then even if you're going to say that maybe he had two names or something, the Gemara would identify him over here as Rava Giyora, the same way as it was everywhere in Shas when it mentions Isur, it calls him Isu Giyora, the same way over here. If it meant that he was actually that Rav Mori Bar Rochel's father took the Jewish name Rava, then the Gemara would have said that. The Gemara would have said Rava Giyora. Okay. Tosfos also gets into the question anyway of chronologically, how does it work that this Isser had relations with one of the daughters of Shmuel, and then he's still around. We see, and as Gemara is going to say now, that Rav Mori Bar Rochel, the son, is still around in the times of Rava. So Tosfos says Rava lived many years. The Rava was born even many years after Shmuel passed away. But okay, Tosfos says that maybe we're talking about that Rav Mori was actually, Tosfos brings a girsa that he was still around in the times of Rav Ashi. So he could have been young in Rava's times, and then he was old by Rav Ashi's times. Okay, anyway. So the Gemara interjects, the Lishna Basra Kasha, the second version that we're saying that Rava, not the regular Rava of Shas, but a different Rava, is the father of Rav Mori Bar Rochel, Kasha, then it would be a problem to understand how the Rav Achshere the Rav Mori Bar Rochel Umanye Bepursa Dibavel. We find that Rav declared Rav Mori Bar Rochel kosher, or Tosfos brings a Girsa, it wasn't Rav, but rather Rav Ashi, said that Rav Mori Bar Rochel is kosher, and appointed him as one of the policemen of Bavel. Meaning, now the Torah tells us, now normally we have that a ger is on the same level as a born yid. Usually the Torah tells us, Torah achas yolachem v'la ger. But there are certain rules that there are certain disqualifications of a goy for certain positions, not a goy, a ger rather, of certain positions. One of them is, the Rashi brings over here a concept, whenever you have a position of authority over other, over born Jews, a ger is disqualified from that. Now, so over here, if Rav Mari himself was a ger, then he would have been puzzled for this position. Because his mother was Jewish, because his mother was a born Jew, therefore Rav, or Tosfos says Rav Ashi, declared that he's kosher for this purpose, and he's allowed to serve as one of the officers of Bavel. Anyway, the point is that, if Rava, and again, if Tosfos says, we're not identifying him as Rava Giora, implying that he was a born Jew, if he is the father of Rav Mari Bar Rachel, and meanwhile his mother is Rachel, who was also a born Jew, then what's the problem in the first place? Why would there be a problem with his yichus such that Rav has to declare him kosher? So the Gemara says, okay, domotrei Mari Barochel havu. Maybe there were two Rav Mari Barochels. Maybe there was one whose father was a goy, namely the famous one in Shas, the one whose father was Issu Gerda. Maybe there was another one whose father was a born Jew, and that would be the one who we're quoting over here, his father Rava. Okay, so the Gemara is not certain about that, and Rashi and Tosfos both say that we're not gurus that part. Tosfos says that it might be a pirush that somebody wrote in their on the side of their Gemara. Okay, whatever it is, getting back to the main point that we're getting at. So this Rava, who is either the brother or the father of Rav Mari Bar Rachel, said like this, have a masnula lahashmaita mishmeid Rabbi Yechanan leptur. He learned the following statement in the name of Rabbi Yechanan, that actually a person who does mechamer on Shabbos, which was the subject of our sugya, is potter completely. Namely, Amar Rabbi Yechanan, namely this Rava, the father or the brother of Rav Mari Bar Rachel, says in the name of Rabbi Yechanan, a person who does mechamer, who leads an animal carrying a burden on Shabbos, is potter completely. B'shoigeg loy mechayev chatas. He's not going to be chayev chatas b'shoigeg. And the reason is because we said b'chok shekol ha'torah kol ha'labor d'zara. Because we said before the whole Torah, there's a hekesh between everything else in the Torah and avor d'zara. And therefore, just like Avodah Zarah, it has to be the person is chayev only if he did it himself. So it has to be over here also. And here it's not, because the animal is doing the work. The mezid nami le mechayev, and he's not going to be chayev mezid. It's none, because of the mission we just said before. Hamachal as Shabbos, v'gavah shachayavan al shagase chatas v'al zonei skila, that if a person is machal al Shabbos with something, by doing something which is chayev chatas b'shogig, or mezid, or skila b'mezid, only then he's chayev skila, implying ha ein chayavan asher gase chatas ein chayavan al zonei skila, implying as Rava tried to use the logic before, that the Mishnah is trying to tell us the other way around also, that if he's not chayev chatas b'shoigig, then he's not chayev skila b'mezid. So now before when Rava tried that, the Gemara said maybe not necessarily, because maybe the Mishnah is not implying the other way around. Maybe there are cases where you chayev chatas but not chayev chatas but a chayev skila. Maybe that Mishnah is only a coincidence about Kiva or a coincidence of Yaisi. So Rabbi Yechanan isn't having any of that. Rabbi Yechanan is just saying the fact that the Mishnah is saying that, especially Rabbi Yechanan is the one who always says halacha kastam Mishnah. So he won't have any of that. The Mishnah is only a coincidence about Kiva or a coincidence of Yaisi, because halacha is not like them. It must be. The Mishnah is telling us something which is actually valid according to halacha, namely that he's not there, namely, that only when there's chatas is there skila, and since there's no chatas over here because it's not like Avodah Zarah, then there can't be skila either. And Rabbi Yechanan continues, b'lav nami lo mechayev. As a matter of fact, he's not even over on a lav, which would mean he's not even chayev malchus. Why is that? To have a lav shenitin laz horas misas beistin. Because this is the kind of lav where there is misas beistin involved. Given that we have, again, where do we see that you're not allowed to have your animal do malacha on Shabbos? Is from the pasuk loy sasa kol malacha ato vincho vitecha etc. uvehemtecha. So we have over in there loy sasa kol malacha. That's an issur on you to do work on Shabbos. Now, what happens if a person does work on Shabbos? If there's eidim v'asra, he's going to get tefillah. So therefore, so that whole lav is something that involves misas beis din. And therefore, so Rabbi Yochanan says, there's a general rule, v'chol lav sh'nitam l'azhoras misaspestin ein lokin olav. Whenever you have a lav, that potentially involves misaspestin, then you don't get malchus for it. So in this case, and in a number of other cases, we say that rule. Since the lav potentially could involve misaspestin, but here in practice it does not. There's no way for mechamer to involve misaspestin, as Rabbi Yechanan says. Nevertheless, the lav still in and of the general lav of lo yisasek ha-malacha does involve misaspestin. So if there's no misaspestin, there can't be malchus either. So Tosfos gets into a very long discussion over here about the pros and cons of that and how that fits with various other Gemaras in Marcus and in other places. Okay. The point is though that there can't be skila in this case. On the other hand, the Isur of Loi Sas Komalacha in and of itself does involve skila. So when something does involve skila or does involve misaspestin, then a lesser form of it does not involve malchus, says Rabbi Yechanan. So therefore, so there's nothing here at all. No chatas, no skila, and no malchus. And Rabbi Yechanan continues, v'afilu l'mando amaloikin. Now, there is an opinion in Masech de Marcus that normally a person would get malchus for such a thing. That when there is an opinion over there that says that there's no such thing lav shenit and las holas misaspestin in loikin olam. That opinion would say in Marcus that no, when there's misa, of course he's not getting misa and Marcus. There's kom lebedad abamine. But when there's no actual misaspestin, as in this case, because all he did was mechamer and we established before that there's no misaspestin in it. Then that opinion would say you do in fact get malchus. Nevertheless, Rabbi Yechanan says even that opinion would agree that this case of mechamer is an exception to that general rule, because lichtav lachmana loy sasa komalacha uvehemdecha. Because the Torah is saying you should not do any work, and then it lists the various members of your household and your animals. Now, why does it need to say the word ata lamali? If we're saying loy sasa komalacha, you should not do any work. Tasa itself includes the pronoun you. So automatically, loy sasa komalacha means you should not do any work. Why would it need to also add the word ata? Obviously, the implication is, hu niu de mechayev behemta le mechayev. So evidently, the implication is that only you yourself, if you do a malacha, you are going to be chayev something. But if your animal does a malacha, it's not the hekesh is going to be, again, between ata or behemtecha. Only, or not really the hekesh, rather. Now we're going to say that the word ata is a mil. Only if you yourself do a malacha are you going to be chai of one or another kind of consequence, but not if your animal does. So therefore, so Rabbi Yechanan says that even if we were to usually say that a lav shenitin lazharas misaspestin does get malchus, but this would be an exception to the rule. Okay. And that's the Gemara's maskana, so we don't go like Rami Bahama's first version. The person is not high of skila for it or chatas. We don't go according to Rami Bahama's second version either, that he was high of skila but not a chatas. Rather, we go according to the Rambam Paskins, like Rabbi Yechanan's version, which is that Mahama is not high for anything at all. So he is over on a lav, but there's no malchus involved. There's no malchus, there's no chatas, and there's no misa involved. Next, we said in the Mishnah, Higia L'chotzer Achitzayna, we said that, so you have this person, again, he was carrying his money bag, he had an animal loaded up with merchandise or whatever, and now it comes Shabbos, and so we said he gives his wallet to the guy, or he puts it on the animal, as the case may be, and he goes until he reaches the Chotzer Achitzayna, and with the first Chotzer in town, where there he can unload his stuff safely and keep it there till after Shabbos. So we said in the Mishnah that what he does is he takes off the animal if the animal is carrying kalim that are not mukta, then he takes them off the animal. And if they're kalim that you're not allowed to move on Shabbos because they're mukta, then we said you don't want to leave them on the animal because tzaba l'chaim, as we're going to discuss in the Gemara now, rather what you do is you just untie the ropes and let the sacks fall down themselves. So now we're going to learn more details about that. Amar Rav Huna, hoise behemte tu'una kleis chuchis. If a person's animal, suppose that the animal was carrying glass was carrying glass dishes. So if he does what now, let's say, as we're going to discuss in the Gemara, let's say that these glass dishes are muktzah for one reason or another, as we're going to discuss in a minute. So we're saying you can't directly take them off the animal. What you do is you untie the ropes and let them fall off. The problem with that is, if you untie the ropes and let the sacks full of glass dishes fall down, they're going to break. So what do? Says Ravona. Maybe korem uksasas maniach tachter. What you do is first you put pillows and blankets under next to the animal, under where the bags are going to fall down, and then umatra chavolim. Then you untie the ropes. Vasak and noflim, and then the sacks fall down, and then they fall onto the pillows, and therefore, you've accomplished both. You've unloaded the animal without touching mukta, and you've also managed to keep them from breaking. The Gemara says, why does he need to do that? The Mishnah says you're allowed to move the kalim, you're allowed to take off the kalim that can be carried on Shabbos. Glass kalim usually are not muta. So then in that case, why does he need to untie the ropes? You should be able to take off the sacks the regular way. The answer is Kika Omer Rav Huna, but Kauni de Umna. The answer is Rav Huna is talking about that these are not just any old glass kalim; these are glass kalim that are used by bloodletters. Now, so Rashi explains that they're disgusting because they were used before to draw blood like syringes sort of. So therefore, it wasn't like nowadays, you know, where you would use a fresh syringe every time. Back in those days, you know, they didn't know nothing of germs. So you'd use the same one over and over again to get the blood. Not syringes, I guess. Whatever, like they have nowadays, tubes for blood or whatever. I don't know. Anyway. The point is, they're miustic, they're disgusting, because they were used before for bloodletting. You wouldn't use them for any other purpose, therefore they're considered muktzah, because obviously you can't do bloodletting on Shabbos. There are a couple of explanations among the Rishonim what exactly the issue is. So if we say it's mius, so what? I mean, the halacha is like Rav Shimon, that muktzah machmas mius is generally not also. So the Rashba says one possibility is maybe we're talking about over here, these are more miustic than normal. You have, let's say, there's the kind of mius, like we learned way back in the third parak. You have, for example, an oil lamp that was lit at one point, and now the inside of it is greasy and whatever. Fine, it's miustic, but the outside of it is still clean enough, you could still use it to cover a keli or something, versus these kinds of things are so miustic, so repulsive, that nobody would use them for any other purpose other than their own, and therefore maybe those, even Reb Shimon, might agree that those are mukta. There's other possibilities. The Ritva talks about maybe that, maybe it's actually mukta machmas chisor and kiss. What we're talking about is these are, you have a category of mukta, where you have something that because it's expensive, you would never use it for any other purpose, so those other than its intended purpose, those kinds of things are mukta on Shabbos. And over here, we could argue that these kind of omna are that. These glass kalim that he's going to use as tubes for blood or whatever, they're muktamach and chesaron kis, because they're expensive and he wouldn't use them for anything else. Okay, whatever it is, the point is they are mukta. So the loichazule, they're not suitable for use on Shabbos. Therefore, the Rav Huna is saying you can't take them directly off the donkey. Therefore you just have to untie the ropes. But to prevent them from breaking, you're allowed to put pillows and cushions under them first. However, the Gemara says, don't you have a different problem involved over here, namely that you're preventing a keli from being used for the rest of Shabbos, because before these pillows, the Gemara is assuming at this point, once you do this, again, if you're not allowed to move these bags of glass kalim because they're mukta, that means they're going to be staying on the pillows for the rest of Shabbos, and that means you're preventing those pillows from being used for the rest of Shabbos. Now, we learned before, we've learned earlier in the Masechta, that you're not allowed to do that. Rashi learns over here, it's also because it's similar to soyser, it's similar to tearing something down. Like before you had, these pillows are usable on Shabbos. Now, for the rest of Shabbos, you're making them unusable, and therefore you're making them unusable, so it's as if you're destroying them. And then other explanations we've talked about before are And it could be the other way around. It could be like boine. It could be like building, like as if you're, as if like you're temp, as if like you're cementing them in place because you can't move them for the rest of Shabbos. Okay, or another reason could just be it's not covered Shabbos. So we learned that somebody showing him say it's just it's not covered Shabbos to have something that was usable before Shabbos, and now you're making it, and now you're making it mukta and unusable. So you've been mevato kli mehechone. How is such a thing allowed? And the answer is bishlifi zutri. The answer is we're talking about over here those small bags. So once you've taken off small bags like that off the donkey and put them on the pillows, then what you're going to be able to do is you're going to start, you're not going to have to leave it like that the whole rest of Shabbos. You're going to be able to now start taking out one pillow at a time. Now it's a small container. So even if it's got glass containers in it, still you're getting it down gently from one pillow to another until it reaches the ground. So no pillow is going to have to stay there the rest of Shabbos. So therefore, it's not considered mevato kli mehechone. The fact that for a few minutes until you finish with that process, you can't move it, that's not a problem. Same principle as we had before, for example, that you're allowed to use a basket, you're allowed to overturn a basket and use it for chicks to be able to get in and out of their nest, even though the chicks are muktzeh, because we said that they're only on it for a couple of minutes at a time. So the same thing over here, it's only on it for a couple of minutes at a time, so therefore that would be allowed. But if it was large bags, then you're right, you wouldn't be able to do that. Tosfos earlier in the Masechta gets into a bit of discussion over the fact that Rav Huna also holds of a concept that we learned in the third parak called Ein Kli Nitol Elo L'Davar HaNitol. That we learned over there, Rav Yitzchak says, and we said over there, Rav Huna holds the same way, that on Shabbos you're only allowed to move one keli for the purpose of another keli that itself is not mukta. Meaning, in other words, so Rabbi Yitzchak would say over there, for example, that you're not allowed to, let's say, for example, we have the case over there of an egg that was laid on Shabbos, or that's going to be laid on Shabbos, where the egg itself is mukta for all of Shabbos, and Rabbi Yitzchak had said over there, you would not be allowed to take a bowl and put it under the chicken before it lays the egg, so that the egg falls into the bowl, because that would be, or even actually the other way around, we said to take a bowl and use it to cover the egg after it was laid, so even though you don't have a problem of matal klima echane, because the bowl is removable, but nevertheless, you're picking up a bowl in order to cover something which is mukta, and Rabbi Yitzchak would say that's not allowed. Only if you already have the bowl in your hand, then you're allowed to use it to cover the egg. The Gemara says over there that Rav Huna holds the same way. So then how does it work over here? Even if we're not concerned about mevato kli meichane, because you can easily take off the bags, like we're saying over here, don't you have the problem that you move the pillows for the sake of something which is mukta? So Tosfos says, okay, because we're talking about over here, b'tzorach l'mekoymai, because we're talking about where you need the place of it. And in fact, Mefoshim say that what Tosfos means by that is, since you can't leave the bags on the animal the whole time, it would be tzah balachayim, so it's considered like you need the place where the bags were, and therefore you would be allowed. So therefore, even Rabbi Yitzchak would say, for example, if you're already picking up the pillow for some other purpose, then you're allowed to use it for this. Tzorach l'mekoyme means you need the pillow itself for something else. For example, the pillow is in your way, and right now you're picking it up, and then while you have it in your hand, you're allowed to bring it over there. But yeah, Rav Huna might say, says Tosfos, that you're not allowed to bring pillows specifically for that purpose. Tosfos also mentions over there that maybe even Rav Huna would allow if there's hefsid meruba, if there's a big loss involved over there, and here it would be a big loss, because if you don't have the pillows over there, then they're going to fall down on the ground and break, and therefore even Rav Huna would allow you such a thing. Okay. The Gemara says, Mesvi. Okay, I have a contradiction to that, though. A Braisa says, Hoysed behemte tu'una tevel v'ashoshias. If a person's animal is carrying tevel or ashoshias means large slabs of glass. Means large slabs of glass. So now both those things are mukta. Tevel is mukta because you can't take truma and ma'aseh from it on Shabbos, and you can't eat it. And you can't eat it without taking truma and ma'aseh. Ashoshias are are large pieces of glass, and the purpose of them is that you're going to use them. You're going to use them for either as the Gemara is going to say later, you're going to melt them down and use them to make new glass, or you're going to cut out glass panes from them or whatever. The point is they're mukta. They don't have any use on Shabbos. So the Braisa says, Matar Sachavodin, now again, those things being mukta, you just untie the ropes, Vasakin Nothan, the sacks fall off, Vafapishim Ishtabrin, and you do that even though the sacks are going to, even though the contents of the sacks are going to break. In particular, we're talking about over here, the glass is going to break, nevertheless, you have to do that. So then, what do you mean? So the Braisa is saying, even though they break, implying that you're not allowed to put pillows. So how is Rav Huna saying that you put pillows first? The answer is Hossam Bekulsa. The answer is that Braisa is talking about where you have these are large pieces of glass, which are, we're not talking about Ashoshius can mean, now the word Ashoshius actually can have two meanings. The word Ashoshius can mean a lantern. So the Gemara at first thought, we're talking about lanterns. So in that case, they're Kalim that are going to break. But now we're answering that, no, we kind of mean Ashoshius in the other sense, meaning we mean large slabs of glass. So they're not Kalim. What do you do with them? You use them to cut out from them pieces for window panes. Or the Rambam says what you do is you melt them down to make new glass. So therefore, so if they break, it's no big deal. Now, it's true if they break, what may happen is you may end up with various small shards as well, and you're losing that. You may have the large pieces are still usable because you can still cut out, large glass panes from them, or you could, or as the Rambam says, you could melt them down. You might think though that the Chum are still worried about, after all, you're going to have the small shards and slivers of glass that are going to break, which are going to get lost. You're not going to be able to pick up all of them. So the Braisa is saying that in that case you have no heter for pillows because there's no real hefsid involved. As the Gemara is going to say, it's only a hefsid mort. It's only a small loss because most of the glass will still be usable even if it falls on the ground. Whereas Rav Huna is talking about where they're actual glass kalim, where if they break, then it's going to be a hefsid mort. The Gemara says Dekanami. In fact, yeah, we can see that from the actual wording of the Braisa. Dekatani Dumya de Tevel. Because after all, the Braisa mentions in the same breath Tevel and Ashoshius, implying Ma Tevel de Lechozile, Avhochanami Lechozile. Implying Tevel is something completely unusable on Shabbos. Even Koyanim can't eat it because Truma and Maisa hasn't been taken from it. The same way, we have to be talking about Ashoshius that are completely unusable. Namely, like this, where they're large slabs of glass. Okay. So in that case, what does the Braisa mean when it says, even though they're going to break, we're not worried? If they're large slabs of glass, then yeah, who cares if they break? The answer is, you might have thought without the Braisa telling you, maybe in fact the Chachamim are concerned even for a hefsid mort, and in this case there would only be a hefsid mort, because again, most of the glass is still going to be usable for its original purpose. You're only going to have the small fragments and shards or whatever that are not, so you would think maybe the Chachamim are concerned about that level of hefsid. Kamash Malan, therefore the Braisa is telling us that not, as long as there's no hefsid meruba, then they're not going to allow you to bend the rules of Shabbos, even the rules of Mukta. So if there's a hefsid meruba, namely that you're talking about glass blood letters cups or whatever, and the only way to get them off safely is to have pillows underneath them, because otherwise all of them are going to break and you're going to have a hefsid meruba. That's what Rav Huna is telling us, that you can put pillows and cushions underneath it. But if they're large slabs of glass, where there's no, most of the glass is still going to be usable, even if it falls on the ground and then some of it breaks, only small shards of it aren't going to be usable. That, the Braisa is telling you, then you have no heter to put pillows over there. Okay. More on this topic of unloading the animal, Tanya Rav Shimon Yechoyim, Hoysa Behemte Ta'una Shlif Shel Tvua, suppose that the person's animal is carrying a sack full of grain, so how do you get it off the animal? So what Maniach Rosh Tachta, what you do is you put your head under the bag on one, and we're talking about, Rashi says over here, the Tvua is Tevel, so you have the same problem, that you can't unload it directly from the animal because it's Mukta. So what you do is Maniach Rosh Tachta, you put your head underneath one side of the bag, you move with your head, like this, the bag is normally hanging on both sides of the animal. So you use your head to move it over to one side. Well, who knows for me? And then it falls off on its own. Once it gets heavy enough on one side, it'll fall off itself. So that's allowed because, as we learned before, you're allowed to do tiltum on that side. You're allowed to move mukta indirectly using other body parts, such as in this case your head.
Okay.
The Braisa continues, Chamodesh Ram Gamliel hoisted to own a divash. One time Ram Gamliel's donkey was carrying a load of honey. The load, and he got back to town too late to be able to unload it on Shabbos. The load rotsa lapoka on Matzoi Shabbos. He did not want to unload the donkey until Matzoi Shabbos, as we'll see in the Gemara, the Gemara is going to discuss in a second why not. And the result was the Matzoi Shabbos Mesa, so the animal stayed over there with the load on it throughout the entire Shabbos, and on Matzoi Shabbos it died. Before they had a chance to unload it at the end of Shabbos, I guess. As Moses says, what do you mean? How could Ram Gamliel do that? V'hanan tznan no to kelim ani tolin. Our Mishnah had said that you take off the kelim that can be taken off. Honey is not mukta. So you can eat honey on Shabbos. So why didn't he unload it? We said that you should do that. The answer is kshehidbish. The answer is because it wasn't fresh honey. It was honey that had spoiled, that had gone sour. So therefore, it's not edible. As Moses says, in that case, why is he bothering to carry it in the first place? Hidbish l'may chazim. Honey that spoiled, honey that went bad, what would he use it for anyway? Why is he having his donkey carry a load of spoiled honey? The answer is l'chitzes gamli. You can still use it for sores on camels. A camel on its hump sometimes develops sores from the fact that you have a saddle on it, and you have a person riding on it, and whatever, and it develops saddle sores. So honey is good for that to put on them, but you can't use that on Shabbos because you're not allowed to treat animals. You're not allowed to give medicine to animals on Shabbos. So therefore, it's mukta, and therefore he wasn't going to remove it on Shabbos. So the question is, why doesn't he do, like we said in the mission of Yatra Kalim Yiplasakin? Why didn't Ram Gamliel untie the ropes and let the bags of honey fall down by themselves? The answer is Mitzduruziki, because if he does that, they're going to break when they fall on the ground. And then all the honey is going to spill. Okay, so the question is, why didn't he do like what Huna said? The Yavi Kodam Uksosis Yaniach Tachtehen. Why didn't he bring pillows and cushions and put it underneath him? The answer is mitanfi, because in this case, we're talking about a load of honey. Apparently, what the Gemara is assuming is, I guess this was a normal way to carry honey in those times. They didn't have the honey in jars or whatever. They had the honey directly in sacks, so not a sack made out of cloth that would leak out, but I guess like a leather sack or something. The honey was directly in there. If it falls down onto a pillow, it may break open. What's going to happen? The honey is going to spill out, and then it's going to get all over the pillows. Now you can't wash the pillows on Shabbos. Now it really is overcome avato klimei chane. Now you really are being avato klimei chane, because unlike the case where we said before involving small bags, where we said after you get them down onto the pillows, then you can start removing the pillows one at a time and eventually get it down to the ground. Here, you're not going to be able to, here, it's not just a matter of that the bags of honey are on top of the pillows. The problem is the pillows themselves are going to be dirty, are going to have honey spilled all over them. And now those pillows are going to be mukta until the end of Shabbos when you can wash them. So therefore, Ram Gamliel can't do that either. Okay. The problem is, okay, but you have the problem of tsa balachayim. How can you leave the animal standing over there all Shabbos with the burden on its back? The answer is, katsava tsar balachayim dirabanan. Ram Gamliel held that tsa balachayim is an issue only dirabanan. The Gemara has a discussion about this in Bava Metzia in connection with the whole matter of priko t'ina, the mitzvah that the Torah tells us that if you see your enemy's donkey collapsing under its burden, v'chaldalta me'azovlo, you're not allowed to hold back from helping him, ozav tazav imay. So the Gemara in Bava Metzia there has a whole long discussion about the question, does that mean that tsa balachayim is deraisa, or is it only dirabanan? Ram Gamliel held it's only Drabbanim. So therefore,
Rabbi Gamliel didn't hold of Hefsek Maruba. We saw previously that you can untie it if Hefsek Maruba. And here,
but one second, over here, it's the other way around. If you put pillows and cushions, what's going to happen is, we said, the honey is going to spill onto them. So you're going to have hefset of the honey, you're going to have some of the honey is going to go to waste anyway, because some of it is going to spill on the pillows. But the point is, the hefset meruba before was that we said you're going to have glass kalim fall on the ground and break. here what we said is, that here what we're saying is, that there's no way, if you let them fall directly on the ground, they're going to break open, and all the honey is going to spill out. If you have them go on pillows and blankets, some of the honey is going to spill out, and it's going to make the pillows dirty, and they're not going to be usable for the rest of Shabbos.
So, what about the animal who the animal that dies is also a hefsed merubah, isn't it?
Okay, but he didn't. One second. That's why. Maybe that's why the Gemara is stressing that the animal died on Matzoi Shabbos. So by the time he came on Matzoi Shabbos to unload it, then at that point it died. In other words, he didn't know. He didn't know it's going to die. Obviously, if he'd known, yeah, that would have been a hefsed merubah. But the point is, it only died after Shabbos, and by that late, it was too late to do. By that time, it was too late to do anything.
Well, that's the point. So it still has hefsed merubah even after Shabbos.
That's fine, but the point is he didn't know that. If he had known there was going to be that hefsed, yes. So again, what the Gemara is saying over here is if he had held that Tzar Bala Chaim is Daraisa, as in fact is the halacha, then he would have unloaded the animal in spite of all these things. What he would have done is, as the Gemara is going to say next, that the Gemara is going to discuss soon that there's ways of unloading it without that there's ways of unloading it in that case. So he would have done that. But because he held Tzar Bala Chaim is Dar Rabbanan, and he didn't know the animal was going to die as a result of this, so therefore he didn't unload it, and the end was that it died. But he couldn't have known that. He couldn't have known that in advance. But since again the Rambam Paskin, and it's brought in Shulchan Aruch. Given that Tzar Bala Chaim is Daraisa, then what we say is that no, if you have no other way, if there's no way, the pillow, the untying the ropes is not going to work, and the pillow method is not going to work, or whatever, then what you do is perkin benachas. Then you take off the stuff off the animal gently in order not to break it, and in order not to leave the animal carrying it the whole rest of Shabbos. Again, that's talking about if it's a large burden. If it's a small one, then the animal is not going to have so much sire from it, so then you just leave it on the animal until Matzoi Shabbos. Obviously, in this case, it was a large burden. Okay. So now the Gemara is going to talk more generally about this whole matter of leaning on or using animals, and our Mishnah is going to feature in the discussion. So the Gemara tells, Abaya Ashkechele l'Rabba to come a shafshif. Abaya one time found Rabba, who was his uncle and was his Rebbe, to come a shafshif le l'brei agaba de chamra. He was rubbing his son on the back of a donkey, like he was playing with him, like he was using the donkey kind of as like a slide, so that like the kid is going onto the donkey and then sliding off the side, and Rabba is catching him. Amalei, so Abaya says, how could you do that? Come a shamash ma'ab alechayim. You're using an animal. There's a gzeirah d'rabbanan that you're not allowed to ride on an animal or use an animal for any other purpose on Shabbos or on Yom Tov. The reason the Gemara says over there in Beitza is because you might come to break off a branch from a tree to use as a switch, to use as to whip the animal to get it to go where you want to. So therefore, the Chacham answered riding on animals or using animals on Shabbos. How are you using the side of the animal as a slide over here? Amalei. So he answers Zdodinhein. In this case, it's only the side of the animal. He's not putting the kid on the top of the donkey. He's only having him slide off the side. So therefore, it's Zdodin, like Gozer, but Rabbanan. That Rabbanan never made Zdodinhein, because that's not the normal way of using an animal. Minah Temra, and Rabba says, where do I see this from? Where do I see that there's a difference between riding on the animal itself versus leaning on the side of it, because we learned in our Mishnah, Matar Chavolim Vasak in Noflim. We said that you untie the ropes and the sacks fall off. When the sacks contain mukta items, so we said that you untie the ropes and then let the sacks fall down. Now, Rabba says you have to realize now when you untie the sacks from the animal. Very often you need to actually lean against the side of the animal. So Rashi learns when you're untying a thing like that off the animal, at least certain kinds, as the Gemara is going to discuss now, you have to lean against the side of the animal. So you're using the animal, and still the Mishnah is saying that it's allowed, implying that's not considered that kind of thing is not also. Tosfos learns a little differently. Let's learn another line of the Gemara, and then we'll talk about. Then we'll talk about what Rashi and Tosfos say. So my love, b'chaver gvalki. Shouldn't we assume Now, the Mishnah is talking about where these sacks are tied together, were tied together, chavar means attached, with gvalki, which means Rashi describes you have a way of loading up an animal was you would have two sacks, one on each side, and then you have a rope connecting the two sacks. Now, if you do that, when you have that kind of thing, so if you're untying the ropes, so Rashi learns of necessity you have to lean against the side of the animal as you're untying the rope. So therefore, we see that you're allowed to lean against the side of the animal. Tosfos learns differently. That a chavo gvalki, Tosfos says, is that you have each sack has a rope, and each sack has a rope coming out of it. You tie the two ropes together on the back of the animal. Now what you do is the sacks are very heavy. The sacks are hanging down on both sides. So what happens when you're untying the rope? You're not going to be able to untie it if the sacks are hanging down and putting their full weight on the rope. You're going to have to, as you're doing this, you're going to have to lift up the sacks in order to give the rope some slack so you can untie it. Now, at that point, the sacks are leaning on the sides of the animal. That's called studding. So we see, and nevertheless, we see that that's mutter. So Rava says, so we see, therefore, that Abanan do not make a gzera when it comes to tzadin. But the Gemara says not necessarily. Loy b'chavar agvalki deloy habut tzadin. No, because the Mishnah could be talking about specifically where they're tied together using a chavar agvalki, which Rashi explains. They're not tied directly together, not like in the previous case where you have the ropes are tied directly together from the one sack and from the other. Rather, what you have is there's a metal ring in the middle with a buckle in it. So what you do is, so you have the ropes are tied around the buckle, so you remove the buckle and the ropes come off. So in that case, you don't need to lean on the animal in order to take it off, or you don't have to, as Tosfos says, lift up the bags a little to give the rope some slack, because you don't need. All you need to do is remove the buckle and the bags fall right off. So maybe that's what the Mishnah is talking about. Inami belechta, or another possibility is there could be a lechta in there, which is also something similar. Rashi describes it. It's a bent piece of wood that holds the two sides together, sort of like a staple. Same idea. In other words, you have there's something holding the two ends of the rope. So in the first case, we had they were wrapped around the buckle, and you remove the buckle, and the ropes fall off. In the second case, you have the two ends of it are being held on this bent piece of wood. So you remove the piece of wood and the sacks fall right off. So again, not necessarily is the Mishnah talking about a case where you actually have to lean on the animal or lift up the bags in order to untie the rope. So there's no proof from our Mishnah that tzadin or mutter. Okay. So first of all, there's no proof from that. But second of all, Esve, Abaya asks on Rabbah, how can you say that you're allowed to use tzadin? Now, the same way as you have a gzera midrabanan not to ride on an animal on Shabbos, there's another gzera midrabanan not to climb up a tree on Shabbos, not to use a tree on Shabbos. And again, the reason is because in the course of climbing up, you may break off branches or whatever. What we learn in a Mishnah in Sukkah, shtayim bidei adam v'achas ve'ilan, if you have a Sukkah, now, a sukkah needs a minimum of three walls. If you have two that are man-made, and the third one is made using a tree, Rashi learns over here what it means is that you're using the tree as one of the walls of the sukkah. And now you have, so the schach is sitting, the schach is lying on the tree, or maybe you drill holes in the tree and put the ends of the schach in there, whatever. So therefore it's considered using the tree. As some of the Rishonim say, because the idea would be, Rashi doesn't spell it out over here, but some of the Rishonim explain Rashi to be saying that what you would do is it was very typical in those days to put things on top of the schach. When you're in the sukkah, you would put things on top of the sach and then take them down when you need them. So that's considered using the tree. Tosfos discusses over here and in sukkah that maybe what it means instead is that the floor of the sukkah is partially on a tree. So you have two walls of the sukkah are on man-made supports that are on the ground, and one of the walls is supported by a tree. Anyway, so in those kinds of cases, the Mishnah says ksheira. So that kind of thing is a kosher sukkah because it's got three walls. And the fact that one of the walls is a tree, according to Rashi, or that the tree is supporting the floor is not a problem because the walls can be made out of anything. The walls can be attached to the ground. But the ein olam lo b'yamtev, but you're not allowed to go into such a sukkah on yamtev because midrabanan, you're not allowed to go onto a tree or to use a tree on Shabbos or on yamtev. And the word oilin, by the way, means to go into the sukkah. In those times, usually they built those sukkahs on the roof. So therefore, oilin was, as the Gemara's term, for going into the sukkah. Anyway, the point is, now, on the face of it, my love, the chak baby ilan, on the face of it, when we say that one wall is supported by a tree, what do we mean? We mean that you carved out, you drill the holes in the tree, and put the ends of the bamboo or whatever of the schach into there, to have a lahut studin. So now it comes out, therefore, that, so now it comes out, you're only using the side of the tree. And utzdod in asurin. And we still say the Mishnah is saying that the fact that you're using the side of the tree, it's still asur. So what are you telling me, Rabbah, that you're allowed to use the side of an animal? If you see from there, you can't use the side of a tree, and it's both the same basic kind of gzera. The answer is loy, not necessarily. No, we could be talking about actually where you bent down the branches of the tree, you bent them towards another tree, and then tied them together and made the wall out of that. And then you put the schach directly on that, you become a shlamish b'ilon. So then you're using the tree itself. Because now you're using the top of the tree, and that everybody agrees is awesome. So the question is, ihochi ema sefer. Okay, but if you're going to say that that's what the Mishnah means, that you actually have, that the schach is resting on top of the tree, the problem with that is, ema sefer, look at the next part of the Mishnah, sholosh bidi adam ba'achas v'ilan, we're saying that if there are three walls that are on man-made supports, and one supported by a tree, and then that's more than you need, because a sukkah doesn't really need four walls. A sukkah only needs three. Ksheir of a olam of a yamtiv. Then the sukkah is not only kosher, but you're allowed to go into it on yamtiv, because it has three walls that are on man-made supports. The ida kafi le'ilan, my olam of a yamtiv. If you're telling me that you're talking about you bent down the branches of the trees and use them, you use the trees themselves as the walls of your sukkah, and you have the schach on top of the wall, how is it mutter still? The fact is, the same way as before, when you had two walls that were regular and one that's on top of the tree, we're saying it's also to go into that sukkah on Yom Tov because you're using the tree. Wouldn't you have the same problem if you have three walls on the ground? Fine, three walls by themselves is enough to make a sukkah, but the fact remains that you're still using the tree for your schach. You still have one end of your schach is on the tree. The answer is, so the Gemara says, "V'elamai tzdodin asurin." Okay, so what are you going to tell me then? So Abaya, so you're asking the question. So you're saying tzdodin also. So safe on my own lobby yomtiv. Then okay, even according to you, then you, whichever way you look at it, you have to understand the question. Either way, if you're going to say you're using a tree, then it's always for your schach, then it's always, like, you're using a tree to support your schach, it's always going to be also, whether you have it supported on top of the tree or the side. Fine, Abaya, you're going to say, we're talking about we're supporting it on the side of the tree. Then still you wouldn't be able to go into it on Yom Tov. The Elam, so Ela Hosn Begavoza Parsechana. So there, we have to answer, therefore, that we're talking about the tree has a lot of branches that come out of the sides, and it's a very thick tree. So therefore, so we're not talking about, when is it mutter, is you're only using it as a wall of the sukkah, you're not actually supporting the schach on the tree at all. You just, the tree itself has very thick branches, and therefore it's thick enough to serve as a functional wall, and that's all you're doing. You're not actually putting the schach anywhere on it. So therefore, you don't really need that fourth wall at all, because after all, you only need three walls for it to be a kosher sukkah. The fourth wall is not touching the schach at all. So therefore, that's why the Mishnah would be saying you're allowed to use that sukkah on Yom Tov. The ilan gofei doifin ma'amahu. So the tree itself is just serving as a wall. Doifin ma'amahu, the shavi, it's only serving as a wall, nothing else. And then that's why you would be mutter. Whereas in the previous case, you need the tree as one of the walls of your sukkah, because without three walls, you don't have a kosher sukkah, and therefore that would be also on the grounds of studying. In fact, the Gemara says dekanami. In fact, we can see that clearly from the word of the Mishnah. Dekatoni, because the Mishnah continues, Zakwal, kol ilu sheyinota le'ilun v'yichol alamud. If the situation was that if the tree weren't there, the sukkah would still be able to stand. Oilun lo b'yamtiv. Then you're allowed to go into that sukkah on yamtiv. So therefore, so we see it's a question of whether the sukkah will stand without that extra wall. So therefore, so shmamina. So that proves we are actually talking about the question of whether the we're not talking so much about the question of whether the schach, of whether the tree is supporting the schach or supporting the walls or the floor or whatever. We're talking about whether it's being used as a wall of the sukkah. So if it's being used as a wall, it's not essential to the sukkah, then we're saying it's mutter. If not, then not. Okay, so we still don't have a proof yet that sdodin or mutter, as Rabbah had said. So we'll continue with that. We'll continue with that tomorrow, Bez Hashem, and get to the Maskana about that.